Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers. And $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
One last time from the FanDuel Sportsbook set. We are live on Sports Grid. I'm Kevin Walsh. That is, of course, Ben Stevens. We're out here on Radio Row in Arizona. Super Bowl 57, the Philadelphia Eagles, the Kansas City Chiefs. It's a big one, Ben. It's a big one, no doubt about it.
Just 2 days away, Kevin Walsh, from Super Bowl Sunday, the Andy Reid Bowl, the Kelce Bowl, or Super Bowl 57, the Eagles and the Chiefs. And here we are, Kev. It's bright and early. It's 5 a.m. Mountain Time, 7 a.m. Eastern, and still no movement that we have seen on those Super Bowl numbers from this week. Still a point and a half in favor of the Birds. Still minus 122 on the money line in favor of Philly. Plus 104, the underdog money line price for Kansas City. And the total, Kev, remains the same at 50 and a half. When might we see some movement?
And again, I think the answer is you can still see some stuff over the weekend. Mm-hmm. But it is going to be marginal, right? We're not going to close at 52 and a half or 48 and a half on a total. Nobody's going to be laying three. I don't think Kansas City's flipping to a favorite, right? We are kind of where we are going to be with these numbers. So we can, you know, feel a little more confident in our breakdowns. I know we always want to maybe wait, all right, let's get a piece of movement here and react to this. This is what it is.
Yeah.
This is what it's going to be. And over the course of these 2 hours here, we're going to talk, of course, a lot about the side and the total. We got a fun little pick six coming up in hour number two with not just myself and Ben, but of course, we're not going to do a Super Bowl pick six and not have DRS in the mix for that as well. We'll break down the game, some of the props that we like, but we will also hit the NBA a little bit, as yesterday was the trade deadline, and we had over 20 trades at the deadline, some more notable than others. That's because some were arguably one of the five biggest trades in NBA history, with Kevin Durant going to the Phoenix Suns. The Suns in action last night against the Hawks, and they didn't play. You know, as we have an Kevin Durant, of course, didn't play. Neither did Devin Booker.
Right.
As we sit here, Ben, a little more time to react to that news, take in that news. Durant's not playing until the first game after the All-Star break at best. Mm-hmm. It means that the maximum number of games the Suns' big three will play before the postseason is 22. Maximum.
Yeah.
That's if they played every game. We know that's not happening. Again, you said yesterday the over-under, right, maybe 12.5, 13.5. There's a world that the Western Conference favorites have their big three on the court for 10 or less games together before the postseason gets underway.
And the regular season is important because right now Phoenix, with the loss last night to Atlanta, just three games above 500, a 30-27 record overall. They're a half game ahead, Kev, of both the New Orleans Pelicans and the Minnesota Timberwolves, holding on to that sixth spot. Of course, as we know now in the association, the top six teams, they get out of the play-in tournament. They do not need to play in the play-in. And of course, yes, you're all looking at the postseason, and those prices to win a Western Conference crown are what you are going to do come April, May, and of course into early June. And they are still the favorites, the Phoenix Suns at plus 240. But Kev, I think the idea of, okay, they're not going to play together, they're not going to have all that long to gel together, is being reflected in those odds. Because yesterday at this time, following the blockbuster deal for Phoenix acquiring Kevin Durant, they shot up the board, the short favorites in the Western Conference at plus 200, a full dollar in front of the Denver Nuggets, Kev, who you well know have the best record by far in the West right now. Now the market is settled a little bit. Phoenix remains the favorites, plus 240, but only 50 cents ahead of the Denver Nuggets at plus 290.
Radio audience in the mix here on this Friday morning out here on Radio Row. Kevin Walsh, Ben Stevens, Sports Grid on the FanDuel Sportsbook set. A little early line action here. To go over to Lakers-Bucks quickly, because we're not going to do as much pure NBA recap. We'll talk more about the trading. The Lakers were very busy. Still, even yesterday, they send out Patrick Beverley. They bring back in Mo Bamba. Thomas Bryant requested a trade, by the way. All right, man. I mean,
He was mad he didn't get the pass. He goes, hey, I sealed my shorter defender down in the post, LeBron. You could have dumped it down for easy two.
He was upset his minutes were cut because AD returned. One, what'd you think was going to happen? Two, did the Lakers play a prank then by sending him to Denver, where he's now behind Nikola Jokic? Little interesting move there from Thomas Bryant, certainly. Here's the thing with this Lakers game. Mm. They battle basically for a full 48 against the Bucks. Man, no LeBron. None of the new guys make their debut. But this has become the story for this team. You watch the Lakers, and if we could just erase the records, right? And if everybody's going to get in, you'd be like, man, the Lakers got some real juice to them. But it's that time is not on their side.
Right.
They are 6 under .500. Their next game is against the Golden State Warriors. They have to start winning basketball games. They've now lost 3 in a row. And, yes, they are within earshot of the 4th seed, but there's a lot of teams in front of them.
Absolutely so. Only 5 games out of that 4 spot in the Western Conference, but there are a lot of teams in the middle there, Kev, to make up that distinction. Now, as we look at the other side of things, Milwaukee has won 9 straight basketball games. The difference when you compare now the Western Conference following Phoenix acquiring Kevin Durant at this trade deadline, where everything is very up in the air with how log-jammed it is very much a tier of 2, and I think Philly just underneath Milwaukee and Boston in the East. The Bucks now just a game behind the Celtics for the best record in the Eastern Conference. It's plus 115, Kev, for the Seas to win the Eastern Conference title. It's plus 170 for Milwaukee. That's a 55-cent distinction. They're right neck and neck, and that's really been the case all year long.
Here's the thing. 38-17 is a better record than 38-18. You know what that means? Giannis has a better record than Nikola Jokic. Mm. Right now, Giannis at plus 850 in the MVP race. We are not even at the All-Star break yet. That award is not done. We ask one big question around Super Bowl 57 after this quick break right here on a Friday morning.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Super Bowl 57. Sizz, biz, fiv, fiv, siv?
Sivs.
Exactly, man. All right? What are the questions about? So all week long we've been asking one big question, right? Who should be favored? And we kind of talked about the advantages. We reworked this a little bit here in the game between the Eagles and the Chiefs and maybe ask a question that if we knew the answer to right now, boy, would that really help us know who is going to win this football game. And then, of course, it would trickle down the other ways that we would attack the board here.
Right.
You've kind of slotted something out. Tell us what that question is and why that's the question.
It's been the storyline, Kev, I've probably been following the most throughout all of this preparation, now going on 2 weeks for Super Bowl 57. It's been the storyline for the Eagles so far this postseason. I've mentioned it many times. Philadelphia, in each of their 2 playoff victories on this run to Phoenix for Super Bowl Sunday, have run the football each time, 44 attempts against the Giants and the San Francisco 49ers. So my question is, focusing on Jalen Hurts, how many passing yards does Jalen Hurts finish with, and what will that mean for the ultimate outcome of Super Bowl 57 in just about 48 hours on Sunday? Now, I say that with a slight caveat, Kev, because I'm not entirely sure whatever that total yardage ends up being, if it is truly indicative of what the result ends up being as well, and which team puts that Lombardi Trophy high in the air in the desert sky come Sunday night. Now, what I mean by that is, as Jalen Hurts' passing yards prop has continued to trickle down, opened with an over-under of 243 in a hook, it is now at 238.5. If he goes over that, if he throws for 275 yards or more, does that mean that Philadelphia had an outstanding offensive game? Jalen Hurts went bonkers and is going to win the Super Bowl MVP as his Eagles claim a Super Bowl championship? Or did he go over that prop, throwing for 275 yards, because the Chiefs actually got in front of the Eagles, something that many teams all NFL season long have failed to do, and they were playing from a deficit for the first time? If he stays under, does that mean the Birds continue to attack on the ground, the great success we have seen, or was it a really good defensive game plan from Kansas City to minimize the effects of Jalen Hurts? So I want to know what he finishes with. I'll say this. I think if he goes over his prop of 238.5, I actually lean to Kansas City winning a very close football game around a number of 27-24.
So I would say he's in a sweet spot, right, where if he lands, you know, right around that number, it's like, I don't know what that exactly helps with. I would argue his final passing yard number would really help with this total. If you tell me he throws for 280-plus, the game flew over the number.
Just I agree.
Flew over the number, no question about it. But if we're underneath 200 again, it's an interesting thing. Maybe you'll disagree. If I tell you he throws for 200 or less, that means the Eagles won the game, right?
Absolutely so. And as we have seen in both of their playoff victories, it's been dominant. 31-7 in that NFC title game against San Francisco. 38-7 against the New York Giants. And we'll get to all of the angles that we are looking at this football game on Sunday for a little bit later on in this show. But the Eagles are the best first half scoring offense, not just this postseason, but all year long, for a particular reason. They don't want to necessarily sit back and establish the run, but they do look to take a lead in that opening half and make you play from that trailing position. They were up 28-0 at the break against the New York Giants. 14-0 at the end of the first quarter, and of course 21-7 against San Francisco. Yes, we all highlight the quarterback concern that the Niners ended up playing with, but it was tied 7-all. Under 10 minutes left in the second quarter before Philly added two more scores, Kev, before that halftime locker room to really push in front and change the dynamic of that NFC Championship game.
I think I wonder, too, it can maybe trickle down a little bit to who's the leading receiver in this football game. If it's Travis Kelce, right, that's status quo. But if it is A.J. Brown, that means he had such a monster game, probably. I don't think there's a market for this, but just – the odds that one player has 100 yards in this game would probably be very, very strong.
Yeah.
I would think, right? Who is that player? And, right. And again, that probably answers most receiving yards of the game. You would think if it's one of the Chiefs' secondary guys, oh, okay, that means that they probably started to really have their way offensively, which would be interesting. The question that I have, and I don't maybe know the best way to phrase it, but it puts these two coaches next to one another. Mm-hmm. On one side of the field is a guy that I've been calling the best head coach in football, in Andy Reid, and one of the greatest coaches of all time. On the other side is a guy, Nick Sirianni, who I think at this point now, especially after watching Brian Daboll last night receive Coach of the Year honors, I can without a doubt say is underrated at what he does. Mm-hmm. And I think Sirianni is, of course, so he's still young in his career, emerging in this sport, and obviously the cachet that'll come then with winning and success, if he wins the Super Bowl here, it'll go a long way. And again, maybe it's not a question as much as an idea, but field goals versus fourth down conversions. Andy Reid is way more conservative than some of his playbook would suggest. How a guy who comes up with, you know, ring around the rosy or a 15-yard, you know, remember when he threw the ball like 15 yards down the field to Kelce and his job was to actually pitch it to McKinnon up the side. How the same guy that comes up with all that, he's fourth and four, Pat Mahomes goes, all right, kick that thing.
Yeah.
Let's get Bucker out there.
For sure.
Is the same guy who's always a bit stunning. There's not Sirianni. That first drive, I know everybody says they didn't really pick it up. Well, not true. They actually really did pick it up.
In the record books, it will always count as a 29-yard reception for Devontae Smith on a first down.
But that is not a decision that every coach makes with ease.
Can I insert here? I would say about 70 to 75% of the National Football League in that spot, opening offensive possession in an NFC Championship game. I think a lot of head coaches probably decide to punt the ball and play conservative in the field position game right there to start off the game. Yeah. It's not the opening possession of the second half. It was the opening possession of the entire football game.
You hear, trust your defense. Let's not put them in a bad spot. That's what you always hear in that spot there. But they don't even think about it. A play that's been talked about a lot, well, not a lot, but it's maybe in the build-up to the game you've been hearing it referenced. The Eagles went for a 4th-and-1 on their own 34-yard line. Anybody that watches any NFL game, assuming you watch with the sound on, anytime a team that looks to go for a 4th-down conversion and they are on their own side of the field. Announcers go, whoa, 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 whoa. I mean, what if you don't get it? I mean, have you considered what if you don't get it? I mean, it's worse. And the Eagles went for it with such conviction. We didn't even get that from the broadcast. Like, well, here's the Eagles, man.
Yeah.
We know they're going for it. So I wonder if, is that the difference in the game? But that, and again, it's not as simple as, is Sirianni's aggressiveness going to beat Andy Reid and maybe a conservative nature? But and look, if Andy's taking three, and then Sirianni's given Mahomes good field position because the aggressiveness doesn't work,
yeah,
that can swing the Chiefs' favor. But keeping your offense on the field, which is what Sirianni's always attempting to do, is a big part of why the Eagles are here.
And, Kev, I think it's a fascinating case study because we say this all the time. It is the biggest sporting event on the global stage. Super Bowl Sunday with all the eyeballs. But ultimately, although we've had an extra week to prepare, there's some additional wrinkles to your X's and O's and what your game plan looks like. It's a football game that you're just trying to win. So maybe it's more a question of a team mentality. If Philadelphia continues to stay aggressive in this biggest spot of the entirety of their year, the Eagles are staying true to themselves. What does that tell you about Philadelphia in this spot? Because still, it's the fourth playoff game. Nick Sirianni will coach as the head man in Philly. And it's still the fourth postseason start that Jalen Hurts is making. The experience sides with Kansas City. I think it's almost a testament to, hey, Philly's being themselves. They are going to try to win this football game as they have all year long.
And it is interesting that on one side of the field is the MVP of the league, by the way, as of last night. We'll talk about that a little more now, number two.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the side they were like, yeah, they're probably going to punt or kick a field goal.
Yeah.
That is – and look, that happened in the game against Cincinnati, by the way. This is not some narrative or – he did it against the Bengals.
I want to also just throw this in. There is a prop out there for KC to convert on a fourth down and Philadelphia to convert on a fourth down. Mm-hmm. Both favor to do so. The Chiefs at minus 188, the Eagles at minus 280 to convert a successful fourth down try, which goes to show you again, that's Philadelphia's bread and butter.
Also because no one's better at it, because if it's fourth and one, we already know the play call, and 92% of the time it's the right play call. We'll come back over to the NBA next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Trade deadline day yesterday in the association. A lot of moves made. The bigger moves came in the build-up, of course, the biggest one being the Kevin Durant overnight.
Right.
For a while, you know, before it was, the Westbrook move is going to be the big one because the Lakers have to make a move. They did make a move. They made a number of moves, brought in a number of key guys. They were all out there. The Clippers were big movers yesterday. But, you know, a lot of people, they were calling me. They go, you know, Kev, how are you supposed to do deadline analysis without Donnie Wrightside? And I was like, well, I mean, he'll be here in hour number two.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, but we needed an hour number one. So I said, you know what we'll do? We'll go to the archives. And we'll pull up a little best of Donnie's highlight last year at Super Bowl 56, breaking down. This is Donnie's analysis when asked about C.J. McCollum being traded to the Pelicans from last year. Enjoy this.
Yeah.
So now you get Sabonis goes out there. You got Haliburton moving on one side. But who got the better of the trade? Because you'll see, you know, some of these markets where people say, oh, man, you got robbed on one end or the other. I think it was a trade with nice players involved, and I don't know what the reasoning was behind it. I really don't.
I asked you about C.J. McCollum going to New Orleans, but don't worry about it.
No, he didn't. What?
What is this?
What do you need, a rundown?
What is this? You're asking about trades moving around.
Yeah, I know. I said the first one of the day yesterday. C.J. McCollum going.
No,
I mean, that's fine, though.
No, hold on. You didn't tee this up for me? You expect me to know this?
I did.
You said the first one. I didn't hear C.J.
First one of the day.
Was that even mentioned?
Of course it
was. No, it was not.
What are you
fucking saying? Is this show even live?
Listen, we'll just go right into the trade.
You gotta be kidding me.
We'll go right into the trade from the Pacers to the Kings, in which Tyrese Haliburton.
Why? He already answered. You want to talk about McCollum?
All right, on to the next year.
Yeah, no, all right, yeah, Kev, what about C.J. McCollum going to New Orleans?
No, listen, here's the thing. The Pels are going to – oh, my goodness, man. What a What a rock star. I like that he thought it was a setup.
I love it.
Was really my favorite part.
That is my favorite part, I think, of the entire clip. By far the hardest I've ever laughed on air, live, in my professional career.
And when second
he turns to you and he says, was that even mentioned? And you go, of course it was.
Of course.
As he's trying to cast blame elsewhere. It was one of the best parts of that entire clip.
It's the second hardest I've laughed, with the first hardest being when they randomly put a hip-hop beat underneath a Thursday night football breakdown. And Donnie said he was going to drop a tight beat, drop a tight hook, man, which was tremendous. So good stuff from the crew teeing that up. Let's get to the bigs. Yesterday, the Clippers seemed to be the big movers. Mm-hmm. They bring in Bones Highland out of Denver. Bones, an interesting player to be on the move for the Nuggets, because he's a young guard who can contribute, but seemingly not getting enough juice out of him due to just a log jam in their backcourt. So the Clippers bring him in. Plus, they bring in Eric Gordon. The Clippers' questions are always health. Well, that to me now feels like the same exact question for the new favorites here. The Clippers go from 6-1 to 5-1. And I don't disagree with it.
The third best price now to win the Western Conference at this moment at plus 500. Kev, I think a lot of what we saw in the aftermath now of the trade deadline, with the two biggest moves happening, of course, over the weekend with Kyrie Irving heading to Dallas, and that shot the Mavs all the way up to plus 550, and then the ramifications of Kevin Durant now heading to where we currently sit. And again, Kevin, if you're making your way to the Super Bowl Media Center today, this seat, all you if you come by 7 a.m. Mountain Time. But when they moved up to the short favorite in the West, Kev, at plus 200, it seemed like everything had kind of settled. Now we have the rest of that as the trade deadline, 3 p.m. Eastern Time yesterday, officially coming to a close. And the Clippers on their way up again. Now, Kev, you said this yesterday. There is so many up-in-the-air ideas here for the Western Conference. So many teams with how log-jammed the standings are and where everything sits in the West that it feels like you could find value in many different spots. Mm-hmm. Now the trade deadline is done. We've got about 23 to 25 games left in this regular season. Where do you think the value is now that you look at the Western Conference?
Yeah, so I'm not in on Phoenix because they're not going to give me enough of a sample size. Mm-hmm. I'm not in on Denver because I don't think they're good enough defensively. I know Jokic is special. I worry about the Clippers' health more than any team in the league. I don't know about the Kyrie fit. I'm not betting the Kings. Am I landing on the Warriors again at 9-1? Is that what I'm going to end up doing?
To you, how is that value, right? How is that? It's all right. I'll
come
take
on,
that's fine.
Kev. No,
I mean, should we get Shames' thoughts here? Shames, do you think the Warriors have value at 9-1? They've moved all the way down to the sixth best price, literally 5 days ago, the second best number to win the Western Conference crown at plus 370.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the Warriors right now, you're waiting on Steph Curry. Is he going to come back with this new roster now? Are they going to get the reps in during the regular season? They've still struggled this year. They have not done enough, in my opinion, Ben, to, you know, warrant, you know, that kind of action right now. I think there's a lot of other teams that made some significant moves yesterday. I don't know. I didn't love the deadline for them, so I'm still off on the Warriors right now.
I thought the Warriors would do a lot more.
Yeah.
Though they had pieces to move. Wiseman ended up being a salary dump.
Yeah.
What a disaster of a pick. They could have extended that dynasty for a decade if they draft LaMelo Ball. Mm-hmm. It is that simple. They botched it. But you thought Kuminga could get moved.
Yeah.
Moses Moody, I thought, would have had some juice out there on the open market. Turns out that wasn't the case. Or maybe they didn't want to part ways. I don't know. My only thing with Golden State is, record-wise, they're fine, right? Game and a half back at the fourth seed. Still right now in play-in position. And with Steph, they are, well, with Steph at home, they are virtually unbeatable.
Right.
I mean, they're 21-6 at home on the season.
Crazy.
I know the road stuff is a disaster, but they have a very long streak of winning at least one road game in every playoff series that they play. This dates back to when the finals runs all started. So they usually can steal one, and that's what they'll need to do probably, right, if they want to make an extended run. My thing is, and I hear your point, John, but the Warriors have the sixth best odds in the conference now.
It is crazy.
Like, you're not paying. This was a team that were the title favorites when they won the title, right? You know how we always do the way too early look at headlines?
Yeah.
They were title favorites. Then Boston made some good moves. They got themselves where they needed to be. Season starts playing out. Some things are moving around. But I'm now getting Golden State beneath an unproven Dallas duo. I mean, look at the gap between them and Phoenix. Are we sure? Like, and this is what I'm talking about. You know, most of the highest man in the history of sports media.
Of course.
I'm not some Golden State guy, no. But does that not feel a bit juicy at 9-1?
Absolutely so. And again, plus 370 at this time last week. Yes, a lot has happened outside of what Golden State has done or did not do, and certainly as it looks on their current roster, having Stephen Curry now sidelined for the foreseeable future. We'll get further updates as Steph's injury continues to come back and he tries to return on the floor for the Dubs. But, Kev, it's been such drastic movement here in the last 5 to 6 days that I think you are getting a really good price on still a team that, with all the road struggles this year, the fact that Steph has missed a considerable amount of time, the odds makers has still been incredibly high and optimistic about Golden State because, again, when you look at that price to win the Western Conference, if Golden State is into the postseason, they have the pedigree more so than any other team in the association, and that's been a factor for the odds makers keeping Golden State's price as short as it has been. As you look at the Eastern Conference, Kev, I made the point that I think we're in a tier of two. Does it feel like that is solidified in the East at the end of the trade deadline?
The books certainly agree, right, as the gap between Milwaukee at plus 170 and the Sixers at plus 650 is monstrous. The Nets number's a wild overreaction at 80-1. The record is so much better than the Raptors. I know the Raptors held serve with their guys. They've been bad with those guys in the building. Jakob Poeltl's not that much of a difference maker for me. But, again, this is where you get into, well, what's value, a winning bet or something that will see movement in your direction? That 80-1 Nets number, again, is a bit silly there. Like, they haven't even seen the debut of Mikal Bridges, who apparently there was 4 first-round picks offered for. I don't know about that.
Yeah.
But, okay, I'll tell you what. That's a very pro-Nets thing. Mm-hmm. 'Cause some people were criticizing the return they got for Kevin Durant. Mm-hmm. But if you believe that, that means that they got 4 first-round picks plus a guy worth 4 first-round picks.
Yeah.
And then all these other things that were kind of thrown into the deal.
We brought this up yesterday, and you mentioned it when you looked at that line for the Nets and Bulls. Was it because of what might be happening for Chicago? Zach LaVine rumored to be on the block. Yeah. He was not traded. The Brooklyn Nets win their first game without Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, both officially on the roster. They do so at home last night by margin as they won by 11 points. And I think the spread ended up being 2.5. In favor of the Nets. No, they were an underdog of 2.5 points. Excuse me. They've been a dog now in 4 straight games. They've covered in all 4, winning 2 of them outright. So this Brooklyn team, Kev, still has the pieces in place. You made this argument yesterday, and now it's a further conversation. Do the Brooklyn Nets win more playoff games this upcoming postseason than the Phoenix Suns win playoff series?
Yeah.
And we set the number around 3.5, or if you want to just do an even split-to-split head-to-head matchup, if you think the Phoenix Suns are the NBA title favorites. They're not, but they have the shortest price from teams of the Western Conference. But Brooklyn is in the postseason. To win an NBA championship, of course, is winning 4 playoff series. So, Kev, how would you offer your thoughts on that comparison?
Yeah, so I think if you like the Phoenix side of it, if you love the Suns, right, they're still capped out at 4. You have to be quite low on Brooklyn, I think, to side with Phoenix there. And I wonder if I might be high man in the room on this new Nets roster. And this is not because I preseason picked them to win the NBA championship. That is irrelevant.
That's
I picked
kaput,
a team that
right?
had
yeah.
It's not, and but what I mean is I picked a team that had Durant and Kyrie.
Right. It's a completely different iteration of that bet even where it is now.
If they win a title, there's no victory lap if I told you so. You told me what? That Ben Simmons and Mikal Bridges, what do you, none of that matters to me. I think the Nets can win a playoff series. And again, I think that they can still push teams right now. Just 2 games back of where the Sixers are on the 3 seed, 3 games back of the Heat, who are the 6 seed there. I think the Nets are going to be better than some people think. We're going to do some of those head-to-head comparisons and a little NBA-NFL crossover. That's coming up right here on the Early Line.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Little NBA NFL crossover. Either ors. We kind of just did a pure NBA one with the Nets versus the Suns. What did you think of that? Do you think Brooklyn playoff games versus Phoenix playoff series, where would you side?
I would side with the Phoenix Suns.
Okay.
I think they are going to win at least two playoff series, potentially a third by the time we get to the Western Conference Finals. And I think the Brooklyn Nets will obviously make the playoffs. They could even be hosting a postseason series inside the Barclays Center. I don't think they win more than three games, meaning I don't think they advance to the second round of the Eastern Conference postseason.
The thing for Brooklyn to go against my own argument is if they are not as good as I think, they can so easily fall into the play-in. And we've seen teams, just because you host that final play-in game, not make it through. We know that it can happen in that respect there. So keep that in mind.
Now, as the odds maker you are, would you count play-in tournament wins in this conversation?
No.
Okay, you would have the asterisk to make sure it's playoff games.
So then I'll go to you on this quickly.
Please.
College basketball.
Mm-hmm.
You win a play-in game.
Yeah.
Does that count as a tournament victory?
No, not in my mind.
Not even close, though.
Does making it to one of those 68 teams count as making it to the tournament? I would agree with that. Okay.
Yeah, it does. But
we're on the same page.
Because Iona, this is a very personal thing, but we're waiting. She's got to get a tournament win on the board.
Yeah.
So the entire reason that Rick is there.
Yeah.
And people are like, oh, well, maybe we get into a play-in. That doesn't count. Yeah. That's not. All right. I'm glad we're on the same page.
Good.
With something like the idea that like 16 seeds of one play, like tournament games.
Yeah, we're not going to count that.
Okay.
Right. It's a part of your story in the NCAA tournament, of course, with UCLA going from the first four to the final four. All good.
Excellent.
It's not a tournament victory unless you win in the round of 64.
Tremendous. All right. Here we go. The first one, very relevant to the Super Bowl. As well, we should try to make a couple of these relevant to the Super Bowl, but as well as the main NBA name that has been in the news, and that is LeBron James. Who will finish with more championships, Patrick Mahomes or LeBron James? And, of course, what you believe for this week is going to be very, very important to how you answer this question.
Right.
Mahomes or LeBron, more championships? What do you think?
So let's set the table now. Of course, LeBron James has four NBA championships. Patrick Mahomes only has one. This is his third appearance in the last 4 years in a Super Bowl. Now, there is an idea that Patrick Mahomes is going to be here a ton. But to his credit at the moment, only one victory. I think, Kev, ultimately LeBron James ends with more NBA titles. I don't know if LeBron wins another one, but even for Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs to win three Super Bowl championships, you're talking about a dynasty of sorts in this era. So, Kev, if you were taking that odds maker approach again, who is the favorite side? I would assume LeBron James, but what number would you give it in a head-to-head matchup of sorts?
So LeBron is the favorite, right? Because Mahomes hasn't won this weekend. With a win, though, Pat, what would the updated Mahomes Super Bowl championship line would be, right?
It probably look like the Super Bowl money line right now. Minus 122 for LeBron, plus 104 for Patrick Mahomes. Or do you think it's even tighter than that?
Because you can obviously, you can land on a push in something like this, and they both kind of land with four. But that would, I think the expected outcome is if Mahomes gets a second this weekend, well, two more are coming. Because at least one more, and then he's got so much time to find that other one. You know, that's with Brady. There was a really long gap in between the first three and then the next ones that all kind of came through there.
Yeah.
So that's just something to remember, that Mahomes is still so early in the game here. My thing is, I do think LeBron can win another. That doesn't mean it's this season.
Mm.
And maybe, by the way, this isn't a finals MVP versus Super Bowl MVP debate here.
Yeah.
You know, and yes, could it be cheating if LeBron's an 11th man on a roster for this question? Yeah, but I don't necessarily see that the way his career would be going. I don't think LeBron's going to win another title as anything other than at least a starter on a basketball team.
Agreed.
But I think LeBron would be the favorite in this market. I think he's the right answer because I don't think the Chiefs are winning a Super Bowl this weekend.
Now, if LeBron wins another NBA championship, in how many years do you think that happens? Well, I'll take it here because, Kev, I was pitching to you. We're having a couple of technical difficulties over there. There was an idea that we had a conversation at dinner about last night, that LeBron James is 38 years old in his 20th NBA season and shows no signs of slowing down. We heard from Tom Brady that he wanted to play until he was 45. He was 45 this past year. LeBron James has often reiterated his desire to play with his son, Bronny James, and his other son, Bryce, who many say is as good of a high school recruit as as Bronny has ever been, is only a couple of years behind Bronny James at this moment. Could he stick around feasibly for the next 5 to 6 years? We all anticipate he's got at least 2 to 3 more NBA seasons. Could it be even longer than that? All a part of this hypothetical handicap that we have here, Kev. I asked you that question. How long would you give that range for LeBron James to win another NBA championship? Is it 2 years? Is it 3 years? Is it 5+ seasons?
Yeah, I think after this year, right, we know Bronny would enter the year in 2 seasons. Mm. But the clock doesn't even start ticking until we get to that point there. So I would say LeBron, beyond this, you set the over-under at 2.5 years.
Clock doesn't even start ticking until Bronny James enters the association. That's a really interesting way of putting it, and one I agree with.
Yeah, so let's move it forward then, though. Russell Westbrook, of course, in the news. The Lakers trade him. He's going to be bought out by the Utah Jazz. We've heard a couple of suitors. We've heard about the Clippers. We've heard about the Chicago Bulls. And, boy, does that play a lot into this question here. Will Russell Westbrook play in a playoff game, which your choice, or Kevin Gainwell scores a touchdown? Which do you find to be more likely? We do have odds, of course, on Kenneth Gainwell's anytime touchdown score. Last I know, we said, was checking in at plus 175.
Yeah.
That number, though, has moved back quite a bit here all of a sudden, correct?
That is why my face looked the way that it did, is because it has moved to plus 360. We were at dinner a couple of nights ago here in the lovely downtown Phoenix area having this conversation with our producer, John Shames, who is a speedy man to be certain. And the number was plus 175. And I thought, okay, that's a pretty good number for Russell Westbrook to play in a postseason game this year. If he is bought out from Utah, could he then go to a postseason contender? If he does, of course, he's going to play in the playoff game. If the LA Clippers do have interest in bringing in Russ, he is going to play in a playoff game. That's a hammer. That's a minus 300, if not even more than that, where the Clippers stand right now in the Western Conference standings. But, Kev, if you're looking at plus 360 now for Kenneth Gainwell to find the end zone, which is really remarkable if there has been that much of this drastic movement, that makes it seem like Russell Westbrook is going to Chicago.
Yeah, it certainly does. If he goes to Chicago, I'd be stunned if he played in a playoff game. I'm low on this Bulls team. They do have a positive point differential. They are in the current play-in range. So, and again, reachable if they maybe to get into the 7-8 portion of that play-in range as opposed to being on the backside of that there. But here's the thing. Is Russ going to the Clippers off the board based on yesterday's moves now? With bringing in Bones Highland and bringing in Eric Gordon, do you all of a sudden say to yourselves, well, maybe this isn't the right spot? And this is the other thing. What does Russell Westbrook actually want here? Russ was the favorite for the Sixth Man of the Year award. It was going to be his and he remained on the Lakers. Russell Westbrook, have you seen by chance his current price to win Sixth Man of the Year?
I have not.
24-1. Completely out of the race, they now feel. Minus 170 on Malcolm Brogdon. Now, I could probably sell you on there being some value on Russ for that number, simply if he remains in a bench role with a team. Right. But there's a big difference between being the sixth man on the Lakers and going to the Clippers and being the eighth man, the ninth man, which is maybe a more realistic outcome for him.
If the Clippers were to take on Russell Westbrook, is he their sixth man, or is, because of the acquisitions they made prior to the trade deadline, he just falls into that eighth or ninth role as one of their key reserves off the bench, but not their leading reserve that had to have a conversation with his head coach about coming off the bench for the first time in his career?
And that was an interesting wrinkle with the Laker thing.
Apparently.
They not only traded him for fit and improvements, but just the relationship getting worse and worse and worse as it goes on. I'm going to skip ahead. I want to get to my favorite one we came up with here. The Dallas duo more likely to break up, or I guess which one will break up first, Dak and Mike McCarthy or Kyrie Irving and Luka Doncic? This offseason, we're heading into it at least, we wondered, would McCarthy be in some trouble? Jerry, every step of the way, offered up positive tones, and those remain true. Kellen Moore out. McCarthy's now going to call plays. But how many years could this group fall short and it not make the difference on the other end of it? Kyrie is not under contract.
No.
This could be Kyrie Irving could answer this question to the Mavericks side of it before Dak and McCarthy are on the sideline again. Which one do you think is going to break up first?
I think because of the timeline that you expressed, given the fact that we do not know past these 27 games plus some postseason games for the Mavericks, how long Kyrie Irving is staying in the state of Texas. Of course, Dak and McCarthy, the favorite side to stay together longer. Kyrie and Luka, the favorite side then on the other edge of that coin to break up first. And I would agree with that. I do think Kyrie and Luka will be the first side to break up. We know we have at least one more season with Mike McCarthy and Dak Prescott. And there is a chance, Kevin Walsh, there really is a chance that if things even middle in this area, that if the Dallas Cowboys once again make it to the NFL playoffs, maybe even get into the divisional round, despite the fact that they have now been in the playoffs 12 consecutive times without reaching a conference championship game, that Jerry Jones sticks with both Dak and Mike McCarthy. So I think that Kyrie and Luka are the more likely side to break up first.
What's funny is, so I've been thinking about this from the lens of exclusively Kyrie's decision. And if Kyrie leaves this offseason, obviously they have the answer. If he signs an extension, then obviously then it's going to be Dak and McCarthy. But not necessarily. One, Jerry can just stick with Dak and McCarthy for as long as he wants.
Yeah.
Even if they never do it, I'm probably not giving enough credence to the fact that, I mean, Dak and McCarthy could also just maybe, I don't know, not underachieve.
Yeah, exactly.
Get to a Super Bowl.
They are a talented team, as they have been every time when they have reached the precipice of being in a conference championship game and have ultimately come up short. Of those four people, Kyrie Irving, Luka Doncic is probably never going to leave Dallas, maybe. But Kyrie Irving, Luka Doncic, Mike McCarthy, Dak Prescott, who would you have as the favored individual to leave Dallas first?
Kyrie favored.
Yeah.
McCarthy second. Dak Luke is interesting, man. Mm. They're extending Dak.
Yeah.
If Kyrie bounces and Luka's going to look around like, now hold on a minute, I had better guys when I was playing in Real Madrid. Like, what's going on here right now?
Yeah.
I just, you know how the NBA works. We'll sneak this one in. KD, Derek Carr. We came up with this while Kevin Durant was on the Brooklyn Nets.
Yeah.
So probably skews the odds a little bit, but over a half a championship combined for the remainder of their careers.
I got to take the over, right? Where the Phoenix Suns sit right now, as the favored side to emerge out of the Western Conference with the shortest price of any Western Conference team to win an NBA championship, I have to take the over of a half, thinking that KD and the Suns may be in this span, even this year, win a title.
Is your answer the same if I remove Derek Carr's name?
Yes.
You know what I mean? Yes. Like, that's – all right, so what if I remove KD's name?
Under.
Oh.
However, the reason we even thought of this in the first place was our conversation, I believe, on Wednesday about Derek Carr going to pretty much any potential suitor this NFL offseason and making them a potential divisional favorite if it's in the NFC South or just upgrading their stock in general.
Yeah, I like the over. If we hang out at a flat one, would you expect to push? Or do you think you could go
beyond? I think it's a good bet to take the over knowing that you could push, yes.
Interesting spot there. All right, some fun stuff. We're sneaking a little college football in out here at the Super Bowl on the early line.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Live right here on SportsGrid. That looks great. I will say, how many shots do we have that show the Eagles helmet there? I feel like the Eagles helmet's not getting enough love.
Yeah.
Can we do an ISO with the
Eagles? I
don't
know if we have any shots that show that right now.
What is that about?
Go Chiefs.
Wow.
Whoa. No,
go Birds. Go Birds.
Go Birds. Go Birds.
Whoa.
No, go ahead.
No, I'm not going to say I'm not. I don't feel that strongly.
Okay. Yeah. And it would be, I think it's embarrassing to pretend that you do.
Right.
And at least you're honest about it.
I am honest about it, yeah.
College football.
Yeah, please.
So this is nice for me. I mean, as a major college football guy, many have said.
College football guy.
But it is nice for me to be able to toss it to you here.
Nice.
Because the wonderful world of college football does seem to never stop. And some big news yesterday in the landscape. I'll let you take it away. Let the people know what's going on.
Texas and Oklahoma have agreed to terms with a buyout from the Big 12 Conference that will allow OU and Texas to join the SEC starting next year in 2024. They were set to leave the Big 12 Conference at the end of next season in the 2024 campaign. There have been many conversations conversations over the past 2 years since the news broke that both the Longhorns and the Sooners would be joining the Southeastern Conference, what that time frame would look like. They have talked about what the buyout needed to be, how much money Texas and Oklahoma would have to pay. It seemed, Kev, just a couple of weeks ago, those talks had died down and that Texas and OU were going to remain in the Big 12 through the duration of their contracts. News yesterday, they are out. They will join the SEC starting in 2024. Mm-hmm. What that means is 2 years from now, the 2024 season will be a year of changing numbers in college football. 16 teams in the SEC now, including Texas and OU. 16 teams in the Big Ten, including USC and UCLA, when they join the conference, and the college football playoff expands to 12 as well, starting in 2024.
Is the SEC scrapping divisions when these guys got there?
They literally, Commissioner Greg Sankey has said, we are awaiting the arrival of the Longhorns and the Sooners to have those conversations. And I think the Big Ten looks to probably do the same.
And you like divisions being scrapped? You think that's the right move?
I do. I really do.
Yeah, I know it factors in, of course, with those conference championships. Yep. It'll be interesting, no doubt. Will the MVP curse be broken? We'll talk about that next.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.